I've been reading about a sudden oak death for many years, and then I suddenly saw this report. And my goodness, here in Sonoma County, especially West County, we are in trouble. And I've got Dr. Matteo Garbilotto here with me on the phone. Hi, Doctor. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Arnold. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for calling in and maybe letting us know about this incredible thing, sudden oak death, and really its relevance right here in Sonoma County. I knew we had it, but I was shocked to hear we were ground zero in this.
Yes, Arnold, it's you know, I was listening to you talking to the previous guest, and the topic came up of sudden and oaks together not really being a good fit, and actually, to be honest, it's not a very good name, because we perceive it as a sudden phenomenon. But really, the issue, you know, the whole disease, in order to complete its cycle, takes quite a few years. Mm. And we just do not see it. Mm. And the visible portion of the disease cycle is the one that we see. And to, you know, to our eyes, it appears to be extremely sudden, because we see oaks die in a very short period of time. But in reality, the disease arrived in any location, most likely on the leaves of California bay laurels, and then it stayed on California bay laurels and other understory plants for quite a few years. And then when we have a very rainy year, it jumps on the oaks, and then it girdles the oaks, and within 2 to 4 years, the oaks that are infected during the very wet year eventually die. So really, there is a whole process, and it's been complicated to explain that the what we see and what's really happening behind the scenes are quite different. And I think that the difference has created some problems, because people don't realize that when everything seems to be fine, actually it's not fine. It's when things are happening, and that's when people need to, you know, be proactive about protecting their trees if they want them to survive this terrible epidemic. You know, it's really considered, I mean, I don't like to be gloom and doom, but yeah, it is considered the worst disease epidemic in the world of plants currently.
Wow.
So and California really is at the epicenter of this scene. And because the organism is so aggressive, basically, every single government of the developed world has a lot of regulations and policies in place to make sure that what happened to California is not going to happen elsewhere. So we have a lot of responsibility, because we are kind of the guinea pigs, unfortunately, of this disease, and the rest of the world is learning from us. And I think that really, this it's been a driving force for us California-based scientists to really do what has never been done before. I mean, in just a few years, we have published and we have done so much research on this disease. It's really unprecedented. And yet, even with all this research, we don't have a very clear-cut solution to the problem.
Wow. And I mean, God, it must be 20, 25 years ago when I first heard about it. I remember when I was living in San Francisco then, China Camp in Marin, it started in those sort of areas. And
that's correct.
And,
yeah,
and your name came up way, way, way back when. How did that all work out? And how did your life become entwined with sudden oak death?
It's bizarre. So, I got my PhD from Berkeley, so I'm one of those rare cases where you get a PhD and then university hires you. But then after Berkeley, I went to work in the tropics. I went to Panama and worked at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute for a while, came back to Berkeley, and then got hired. And the same year I got hired, that's the year when, and this is very interesting, it's the year when the disease jumped from killing tannoaks, it jumps to killing oaks. And this is a very interesting thing because the brunt of the disease is really on tannoaks. But 25 years ago, most of the established research environment didn't really care so much about tannoaks because tannoaks were always considered kind of weedy trees that right. took the space of Douglas firs and redwoods.
Right.
And that was ignoring two major things. The most important one is that tannoaks are the source of almost all food for the wildlife in the coast of California. Huh. It's the keystone tree because it's the largest acorn producer. And this was ignoring that fact. And the second incredible ignorance was on the role that tannoaks have played in for Native people forever, because Native people have always known the importance of this tree. And it was really a tree that was king among other trees and still is because of the role that it plays with local people, Native people, with wildlife. So there was a very thorough understanding, yet the establishment didn't understand that. In 2000, when I got hired at Berkeley, the disease started killing oaks. And guess what? Some of these oaks were growing in the yards of very important people, and that changed the scene because all of a sudden, these people were very concerned about their oaks dying. And I remember something that I did. You know, I'd just been hired as an assistant professor at Berkeley. You know, it's very scary. It's a very intimidating environment. And the first thing I did was basically tell everybody, first of all, I told everybody this was a fungus or a fungus-like organism. And then thanks to collaboration with Dave Reese and UC Davis, we were able to prove that that was the case. At that time, people were saying that it was insects killing trees, and it didn't make sense to me. Just I saw insects coming after the trees were almost dead. And I said, this doesn't make sense. If you say the insects are the cause, why are the insects arriving so much later?
Right.
You
know, logic.
It didn't make sense. But, you know, the establishment had said it was insects. And so I started. And then the second thing that I did, after, you know, people started believing me, and thanks to Dave Rizzo, really worked with me, and we were able to prove that it was a microbe that was causing the disease, I started telling people, you know, we should really be looking at tannoaks, because tannoaks are killed in extremely large numbers, and the funding agencies told me, don't even try to do that, because nobody cares about tannoaks. You got to work on oaks. And I said, okay, fine, I'll work on oaks. And then, you know, a few years later, when finally people realized that it was really a tragedy for tannoaks, people came back to me and said, oh my God, Mateo, you got to work on tannoaks because it's so important. And I'm like, oh, really? I thought that we had gone through this and you told me no because, you know, there was a lot of pressure to work on oaks and tannoaks. Now all of these issues have been resolved, meaning that we understand this is a problem, that it's a huge problem that affects the entire ecosystem. You know, it affects tannoaks, it affects oaks. This year, we came out, we realized that manzanitas are being killed in large numbers by sudden death because of the extreme rain that we had. And that was unexpected. And, you know, it's a bit of a, I don't, many people maybe don't think too much about manzanitas, but so it happens that California is the center of diversity for manzanitas in the world. And this year, my lab alone, people in my lab discovered six rare and endangered manzanita species being killed by sudden death, all within a month. So we're talking about six species that only exist in California. They're all rare and endangered, and they're dying because of sudden death. So we're talking about something that's really changing the scene. You know, it's changing our natural environment.
Right.
And, you know, I know that the previous speaker said that trees give you comfort, and it is very true. But actually, it was a little naive because without trees, there would be no life on the planet. So trees are the keystone plant species in the world. And if we took out all trees, there would be no oxygen.
Right.
there would be no clean water. There would be no steady ground because everything would be coming down because roots keep the, you know, the ground up on right. steep slopes. So there would be no mushrooms. So there would be no many animals. Most animals in the wild depend on trees, and so on and on and on. So we're talking about, you know, a major issue here, and we are so unfortunate that, you know, California is going through this epidemic, and this year was really a wake-up call for all of us because we become a little complacent in the past 5 years because right. during the drought, sudden or death doesn't spread. And the reason oh, yeah. for that, and listen to this because this is very interesting, the organism that causes sudden or death, first of all, it was imported in California from Asia on ornamental plants. So it's not a native organism. And that's why, native plants have no resistance to it. The same thing that happened to humans when Europeans arrived in the new continent. The same thing happened to plants when the sudden or death pathogen arrived from Asia and it arrived on ornamental plants. And I feel sometimes crazy. I go crazy sometimes, especially 20 years ago. I was going crazy because I was thinking, because we have to give a flower to mother on Mother's Day, yeah. here we introduce this horrible organism that's killing our forest. And wow. couldn't we just give her a flower that grows in California? We would have avoided this issue from the beginning, you know? But
that's globalism.
That's a really big issue. And you know, when we started discovering that the organism had been brought in, you know, without knowledge, of course, by the right. ornamental plant industry. I remember the dean in my college at Berkeley telling me something that I didn't know, that it's because I'm a forester and I'm a microbial ecologist that has worked in forests his whole life. I really, my connection with the world of ornamental plants was minimal, except for me buying a bunch of flowers from time to time right. to give, you know, to somebody. Right. And, you know, it turns out that the ornamental plant industry is the second largest agricultural industry in the country.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. And I thought you didn't know that either, did you? Really? And so there's, and of course, and I think that this has been a lesson for everybody because, to be honest, the industry has been very cooperative. It's just that they use models that are not very good, and it's been difficult for them to abandon those models because they make sense from an economical perspective. So the models are, we grow plants in easy locations like California and Florida, and then we in the spring, we move the plants throughout the North American continent. And the wow. same thing happens in Europe with, you know, Italy and France and Spain growing plants during the winter, and then this big industry is moving the plants throughout Europe. Well, what happens is that if a microbe enters the trade in California or Florida, then when the plants are moved throughout the country, the microbe is moved as well. And so we yeah. basically paved the way for the spread of these organisms
wow.
by selling plants that were grown in one single location. And these are plants that are not needed for our survival. These are plants that are just ornamental plants. And we're used to, you know, we want that particular ornamental because it's very pretty.
Right.
But I'm sure that we could do with another one that's a local right. plant without moving it across the continent. So well, that was the first issue.
Has there been any traction on changing that at all, prohibiting certain things?
I must say that there's been a lot of cooperative effort between us scientists, the government, and industry. I must say that at the beginning, everybody was kind of shocked, you know, and there was a lot of just, you know, we were like fighting a little bit because everybody was just screaming aloud their own truth, and we were not really talking to one another. But after the first 10 years, I must say there is a lot of cooperative effort to understand how we can develop a better model. And one of the ideas comes from the European Union. And it's an idea that it's the plant passport. Hmm. So basically, it's like a passport that tells you where the plant has been, where it's been grown, where it comes from, when the lot, you know, it has been tested and so forth. And that's something that I think the U.S. is also considering together with one thing that I'm very proud of, because I was one of the people behind it, which is right now we use for plants the same tests that we use for humans to find out whether plants are sick or not. But when sudden death arrived, the plant industry was using tests that were 20 years old.
Oh, wow. Literally. It wasn't a priority.
Literally, there were two or even more, 200-300 years old. And if the test came back negative, they were selling the plant. And I started a campaign to say, we cannot use this test because it's an anachronism. You know, we are in the age of, you know, space travel, DNA technology, the technology was already available. And I got my PhD in a lab that actually developed this technology. And so I really pushed together with a bunch of colleagues. We really pushed the U.S. government to use this new technology. And now we're using, the U.S. is using this new technology, which is comparable to what's used for humans, to make sure the plants are healthy when they're being sold. And it's cool because after the U.S. implemented the new approach, most of the developed world followed. So now what we did because of sudden death has had a huge, huge, huge effect on the entire world because we use these tests that are much more reliable than what was used before.
Wow. That does help, doesn't it?
Knowing what it is,
yeah.
Meanwhile, do we watch out for our oak trees that are nearby our houses, like at our local park? And
yeah, how do people do that?
Well, those gardeners are watching them, I'm sure, but so I know that they can keel over.
Bringing it back closer to home, you know, what can we really do? So the first thing that I wanted to say earlier on, and then I got lost in this kind of broader picture, was that the organism that causes sudden death is actually a distant relative of kelp. And I know that people hate when I say that because I say, oh, kelp is a good thing and sudden death is bad. But, you know, we shouldn't be reductionist. It's true. They are distant relatives. And the reason why I say this is because I want people to understand that water is kind of really our enemy when we talk about sudden death, because the disease really spreads when we have rainfall.
It's the medium.
So it's important because when we go through a drought, we think that maybe things are better. The disease goes into remission. But then what happens, like it happened this year, when we have another rainy year, that the disease bursts out in a new outbreak and a lot of new trees are infected. So this is important because people got complacent during the drought that sudden death was something of the past. And this is why the finding of this year that infection rates had tripled in some locations or were 10 times higher in some or 15 times higher in some other locations, including Sonoma. I mean, that's kind of a warning sign that no, the disease follows as cycles. And during the drought, it kind of goes down, but as soon as it rains, it comes back with a vengeance. And so what can we do to prevent the disease? First of all, anything that we can do, and this is the most important thing that I would like to say, is we cannot really cure the disease, but we can prevent it. So really, if we wait until our oaks are infected, it's too late. And so people really need to be cognizant that, you know, if you care about your trees, you got to do something proactively. And what can you do?
Yes.
The first thing to do is to understand that sudden death is spread by a tree that is not oaks. It's California bay laurel.
Wow.
California bay laurel spreads sudden death, and unfortunately, it doesn't really die because of sudden death. So, unfortunately, the disease doesn't take out California bay laurels.
Do they host it?
It keeps spreading, and in fact, when oaks die, what happens is we have bay laurels coming in. And so the situation gets better, worse and worse. It's a little bit like talking about mosquitoes spreading malaria. And the population of mosquito is increasing rather than decreasing. And so what we need to do is we need to understand that in many parts of California and in Sonoma County, first of all, we have too many bay laurels. Mm. And the reason for that is because of fire exclusion. So bay laurels are trees that cannot really survive when we have, you know, frequent fires. But because we've, you know, excluded fires from our natural ecosystems, their presence has become really preponderant, as compared to, a few decades ago.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the first step to do is to kind of understand that we need to reduce the number of bay laurels. And in particular, if you're trying to protect an oak, is the bay laurels that next to the oak is the one that's going to infect your oak. Mm. And so we normally suggest, of course, bay laurels are beautiful trees and they belong to the ecosystem, but we want those bay laurels that are in excess to be eliminated. And sometimes when we have this little puny bay laurels growing next to beautiful oaks, all you have to do is just take those bay laurels away from the area surrounding the oak, and you already have increased the chances of survival for that particular oak.
That's a starter for sure.
Yeah.
So that's
do the same with eucalyptus too, like in Bolinas. They've ruined Bolinas.
Yeah, well, eucalyptus doesn't seem to be spreading the disease.
No, but they're too tall and they're dangerous when they fall down, and they're quite problematic.
For different reasons. So that's kind of the first step. It's really, and, we're thinking bigger, and we're thinking that we would like to go back to the natural number of bay laurels that we had in the past, but we still don't know how we can do that. So that's kind of something that we need to really. We need to do lot of powwows and figure out and test
what we
can do to reduce the number, the density of bay laurels.
Weed them out.
Because that's going to be key in the future.
Well, that's it. Are you getting much help out there? I know you said around the world they're working on it, but, the budgets and focus, is that happening now?
Well, it's a great question, Arnold. So this is what happened. I think the historical perspective will tell you a lot of what the situation is. So when we first discovered Sudden Death, a lot of money was put into research. And within 5 years, we started coming up with answers of what could be done. And guess what happened? A lot of ownership told us, that's very nice, but we don't have any money to actually implement these control measures. And that was incredibly frustrating to us. And I can tell you something even more absurd, because often it was the ownership were the funders of our research. They were funding our research to get answers. And then they were telling us, well, that's nice you gave us all these answers. Thank you. We're not going to do anything about it because we don't have money. And that comes from the fact that, this is something that it comes from the fact that a lot of the forests that are affected, they're not productive. They're not timber forests. So there's no real money that comes from them. So there are no resources immediately available to be used for control. So that's what happened at first. Now, the larger ownerships, so the Forest Service in part, a lot of open spaces, like Marine, Midpen, the San Francisco Public Utility Commission, the national parks, and in particular, I would like to mention tribal councils. They really are taking this more seriously, and they're willing to invest more resources. And so right now we're having a lot more traction. So there was a 10-year delay, but now there are several groups and ownerships that are attempting to mitigate the disease. So I feel relatively happy right now that we're testing things out and people are investing in our future, because really there's no future for California without our forest. And we really need to emphasize that. There won't be enough water without a forest. So there won't be enough pure air.
Right.
That we get our. So really, we need to protect them. And California is a unique place in the world. There's so much biodiversity, and we need to protect that because we are the stewards of this biodiversity. So I would say that right now we are in a better place because I think finally people are actually investing money. But budget is a big issue. Mm. And, you know, so unfortunately, this is not an easy problem to solve. And that's why we keep telling people the best way is to make sure that this doesn't happen again. So please do not, you know, do not move ornamental plants around the world that are carrying these microbes because it's absolutely nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And there is no way we can stop. There's no band-aid. You know, there's no quick band-aid. There's no quick fix. And so, you know, even with all the efforts that now agency and ownerships and people, you know, even individual landowners are put into it, we will have to live with sudden death forever.
Wow.
You know, it's never going to go away.
Wow. Ooh, that's a daunting prospect, isn't it? My goodness.
But, you know, I think that the big point to make is, you know, it's the same thing as with climate change. You know, you hear the term business as usual or, you know, so if we do something, we could change the trajectory of the disease. And, you know, right now the trajectory of the disease is that in many places all of the adult tan oaks will die and about 75-80% of the oaks will die in some locations. We can change that to maybe, you know, 80% of the tan oaks will die and 30% of the oaks will die, which makes a huge difference.
Yes.
So really, we have to be, you know, I cannot tell you, oh, it's easy to solve the problem, but not doing anything means really losing a huge amount of these resources.
Right.
And doing something can really make a big difference.
Yeah, and what makes California unique, as you say.
it is. It really is. It makes it unique. And we can actually protect, you know, still things will be different, but we won't lose these keystone species. They'll still be there, be in our forests. Maybe there will be less of them, but they'll be there to support the wildlife, to support the mushrooms, to support the nutrient cycling, the clean air, all of these things. They can still be there if we put the effort. So, unfortunately, we have to live, you know, we're living in this situation where we got to invest in it. And again, it's better that we don't replicate this again by simply controlling the plants that come into the state or into the country. Right. We need to make sure that they're not carrying these dangerous microbes.
Wow. Whoa. Fascinating. Wow, I could talk lots more, but unfortunately, I've got to get to my next guest. But we'll have to speak some more about it. It's there's a lot more to talk
about. Another time, if you invite me, maybe I'll come there in person.
That would be wonderful.
I'll be happy to do that. Because Sonoma, I wanted to say one thing. Sonoma not only is at the center of the epidemic, but it's also the center of people doing something about it. And there's, you know, there's a lot of people, including the Sonoma County Master Gardeners, that are doing a wonderful job at helping us track the disease. And that's the first thing, because remember, prevention is key. And we can only prevent the disease if we know where it is.
Right.
So that's key. And Sonoma is my first choice in terms of a county where people are really being proactive about it.
Well, yeah, fantastic. I'm glad that's there. There's a lot of knowledgeable people, and we'll need to work on it. Thank you. I really appreciate your work and your efforts. As you say, it's quiet and it's hidden, and people don't notice, but it's there and it's everywhere.
Yeah, and I think in 2 years from now, a lot of oaks will die because they're being, they were infected last year.
Oh.
And so it will be visible again, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, thank you for having me over your show. I really enjoyed talking with you guys.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Matteo Garbilotto, and appreciate your coming on. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thrice sit thou mute in this enchanted chair, then thrice three times tie up this true love's not, and murmur softly, she will or she will not.